It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, the presumption of innocence is now Republican. Two, the religion of abortion. Three, sports media has evolved into the athlete versus the fan, and sports media has chosen the side of the athlete. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. Welcome to Monday. As always, please download, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can watch the Will Cain Podcast on Rumble or select clips on YouTube. This past week, as abortion took center stage in the United States of America, the only real sound we heard from industry, the only real sound we heard from corporate America, came from the likes of the Writers Guild of America. This Hollywood union weighed in and said they would suggest no movies be made in states that move forward with outlawing abortion. And it made me think, if the Writers Guild of America truly cared about women, they would do something about their members writing female leads as the most unlikable characters. I just finished Ozark, which stars Laura Linney and Jason Bateman, is about a Chicago money launderer who increasingly includes his entire family, including his children, in the business of a Mexican drug cartel. It's about 4 seasons, and I finally finished it this past weekend on my travels. Ozark is a B-. I don't give it my highest recommendation, but once you're in, you're going to want to see it through to completion. Jason Bateman is one of the most likable actors in Hollywood. Whatever charm is and whatever it is, Jason Bateman has it, putting him on a list for me of a handful of actors. If they're in, I'm most likely in. I will see it. Denzel Washington, Brad Pitt, Jason Bateman. But Laura Linney's character in Ozark is one of the most unlikable characters, well, since the last hit popular television series. What is it with the wives? What is it with the female leads? In almost every single major hit, that they are irredeemable. They lack charm. They are unlikable. Laura Linney's character is not the only character out there. Wendy Bird is just one of many. If you ever watched Breaking Bad, Skyler White, Walter White's wife, was one of the least popular characters in that entire genre, not just series. The genre of the anti-hero who breaks bad. That series, that genre, has produced the likes of The Sopranos, Deadwood, and many others where we found ourselves rooting for the bad guy. But the bad guy had to have a charm, an attraction to him for us to continue watching. And it wasn't fun to watch, in my estimation, Carmela Soprano turn into a major whiner. I don't care that she had justification to be a whiner. I don't care that Skyler White hated seeing her husband turn into a crystal meth impresario. I don't care that Wendy Bird was fighting for her family. It goes on and on. You can find other big female leads. I don't think Betty Draper was easy to root for in Mad Men. And then most controversially, as I tweeted out this list of unlikable female leads, I find Beth Dutton absolutely insufferable. I do not like Beth Dutton in Yellowstone. And I know I'm not alone. Social media came at me and said, "What are you talking about? Beth Dutton is the most popular character in Yellowstone." And it's true. On social media, everybody likes to high-five the latest Mean Girl scene from Beth Dutton. But I know for a fact, because I've talked to people, and my anecdote is very powerful, that Beth is simply hard to watch. You have to have complexity in my mind. You have to have some depth. You have to have some redeeming qualities. I said that at the end of Breaking Bad, Walter White became impossible to root for. You have to retain some humanity. As you turn into the anti-hero, there still has to be a glimmer of the hero. There's nothing to root for with Beth Dutton. I guess her devotion to her father. I guess her devotion to Kevin Costner, to John Dutton. That is something to root for. But I don't like Beth, and I'm sorry. And it isn't misogyny or sexism. It's not about not liking strong women. Here's my question. Why does Hollywood only write strong women that are absolute witches? And you know I'm not using the word witch. I'm using that in place of another word, which I probably could use on a podcast, but it would at least be frowned upon within the halls of Fox News. That's not the only definition of a strong woman. It's like these Hollywood writers write the women as either the nag, a la Skyler White, or the witch, a la Beth Dutton. There's other types of strong women. In fact, I think the predominant type of strong woman in this world is one who is the rock that problems break against, that ties a family together, not through evil, not through willingness to do whatever it takes to burn down the world around you, but rather through love. I know I'm taking this somewhat seriously, but I don't get it. I don't get why society, and society is defined by, of course, the radical minority that controls all of our conversations from social media to Hollywood, sees this as the only definition of a strong woman. It's like a strong woman has to be a female version of a strong man. And I don't think that's true. It's the same thing we've defined a successful woman as for the better part of half a century. In order to be a successful woman, you have to go into a man's world, inhabit a man's, traditionally, a man's job, and win. And yes, that is successful. And women who can and do that should be proud. But it is not the only, and I would suggest to you, probably not even the predominant way of being a successful, strong woman. Women are the foundation of society that build the rock of society, which is the family. Yes, you need fathers, and we can and should and will talk more about fathers and their absence and their role in creating that foundational rock of society. But make no mistake, it begins with the woman. It begins with the mother. I think Hollywood has to take a much more expansive, much more open-minded, maybe even a much more traditional view of what it is to write a strong woman. And when you do, my suggestion is you will find characters who are likable. And there are likable female leads. I think Kim Wexler, by the way, in Better Call Saul, is a very interesting, layered character. But when it comes to Wendy Bird and Skyler White, and yes, even Beth Dutton, count me out. That is not, in my mind, the vision of a strong woman. And it certainly isn't a likable woman. All right, here we go. Story number one. Apparently, the field has been seeded. Apparently, the presumption of innocence is now a characteristic exclusively of Republicans. I introduce you to this story out of Wentzville, Missouri. The Wentzville School District came under fire this past week after they posted a question to their students who were enrolled in advanced placement government, AP government, in order to achieve college credit as defined by and as laid out by the College Board. The College Board defines curriculum for advanced placement for a high school student to gather college credit before getting to college. One of the questions on this AP exam reads as follows. Teresa has heard in the news about the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man, an unarmed African-American man, by police officers, but does not think it is necessarily due to racism. Teresa is most likely, multiple choice, A, Democrat, B, black woman, C, Republican, D, Democrat-leaning woman. The student is then asked to select which of these stereotypes is most likely fitting for Teresa. The correct answer, according to the AP and to the College Board, is Republican. If one does not necessarily jump to the conclusion that the shooting of an unarmed African American by police officers is due to racism, then one is Republican. Let's take a moment and think about this question and its intention. The intention here is obviously to stereotype not political ideology, but political instincts and political character. And it is intended to paint one type of individual and one political party in a negative light. Make no mistake, anti-racism has taken hold in not just higher education, but elementary education. Anti-racism is everywhere. And anti-racism believes at its very core that you must assume racism in any type of interaction that produces a disparate impact. And if you don't assume that racism, then you are a racist. The College Board has been taken over by this ideology. It has absolutely, I'm sure, encouraged that when it comes to its curriculum for advanced placement. But that leads to a finger-pointing moment in Wentzville, Missouri, because Wentzville points at the College Board. They suggest that question came from the advanced placement exam. In order for students to do well, they have to be able to answer these questions correctly. So Wentzville says, not our problem, not our direction, the advanced placement, the College Board's problem. The College Board points fingers back and says, not part of our curriculum. Here's what I find absolutely fascinating about this quote-unquote anti-racist question. I own it. I think the answer should be all of the above. And if the answer is Republican, then the Democratic Party and the left, and perhaps the United States of America, has ceded the field, has said the value of the presumption of innocence is a characteristic exclusively of Republicans. You see, I believe we should each, as individuals, go into every situation with some level of a presumption of innocence. Obviously, our criminal justice system requires that. You can't go in assuming a cop is racist if an unarmed black man is shot by police. That would be in violation of American due process. But I would say that extends beyond the criminal justice system to each and every one of us as individuals, because we have to know what we do not know. And we don't know the facts. We don't know the evidence. We don't know the character or the thoughts of the individuals in question. We know nothing about the moment, except that Teresa has heard the news about a fatal shooting of an unarmed African-American man by police officers. That's the extent of our knowledge. Now, make no mistake, that extent of knowledge has driven not just conclusions, but it has driven riots in the street. It has driven buildings being burned. It has driven protests through the year of 2020 that caused upwards of $2 billion in damage and, in some estimates, 25 lost lives of people who live as though that question is all of the information that you need for a conclusion, for an indictment, for a riot. Look, for years at ESPN, when I had the Will Cain show and when I made appearances on First Take, these types of moments came up on an almost quarterly basis. It's not to say that that's reflective of an epidemic of unarmed black men being shot by police. We here on the Will Cain podcast have delved into those numbers at length and at depth. Everyone, every American, vastly overestimates, I mean vastly overestimates, the number of unarmed African American men that are killed by police. Wherein people think the number is in the thousands every year, the number is roughly in the teens every year. But these moments would come up almost on a quarterly basis. And it was always, always presumed in the commentariat and in much of the audience that you could leap to the conclusion of racism. And in fact, if you didn't, not if you denied the possibility of racism, but if you denied leaping to the conclusion of racism, well, then you yourself are a racist. And by extension, the logic flows, you yourself are a Republican. This is a massive problem and will be again when one of these moments comes up during the next quarter. Our society, and not just the man on the street, all the way to the podium of the White House, will indict without evidence. It's not, by the way, exclusive to situations involving unarmed African Americans. This is exactly what happened when there were images of Border Patrol officers mounted on horseback, wrangling illegal immigrants crossing the Rio Grande. And the president of the United States leapt to the conclusion, because it evoked images of, I guess, the days of slavery, that the Border Patrol was whipping black illegal immigrants from Haiti. An indictment from the podium of the White House with zero facts, with zero evidence. And then what happens? What happens is what happens in all of these cases, almost every single one of these cases that crop up on a quarterly basis. It turns out not to be true. Whether or not it's West Point graduates who are flashing the OK symbol, or a kid at a Chicago Cubs game playing the circle game, we leap to the conclusion of racism and never revisit when it's proven to be false. How much have you heard? Have you heard an apology from the White House about indicting those Border Patrol agents as racist slave drivers whipping black illegal immigrants? No, you haven't. It's not just the criminal justice system that should proceed with a presumption of innocence. Any person of goodwill, any rational person who cares about facts and evidence, any person with humility and grace, any person who has the slightest bit of, yes, hear me here, empathy for the individual being indicted knows you cannot leap to these conclusions. Play a game next time. Play the game of what if you were at the center of the storm? What would you want people to assume about you? What type of conclusions would you be comfortable with people leaping to? What type of indictment, totally removed from your own character and your control, are you willing to tolerate? We should have an expectation, a requirement, that every single one of us is innocent until someone can marshal some evidence to prove our guilt. I'll tell you this. I know this question by the College Board, as placed on the Advanced Placement Test in Governance, was intended to paint Republicans in a bad light. But what I'm here to tell you is it paints Republicans in the only complimentary light on that list of multiple choice. If Republicans are the only ones who honor the presumption of innocence, well, that is an honor for Republicans. Everyone, Democrats, black women, Democrat-leaning women, the other options on this multiple choice, should all embrace the idea of knowing what you do not know, of embracing humility, of embracing grace, and embracing the presumption of innocence.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Story number two. On Mother's Day weekend, as I spend Monday telling you how unlikable some of our female lead characters are in America's most successful miniseries, much of the left spent the weekend protesting the potential overturning of Roe v. Wade at Catholic Church Mass, interrupting services, standing outside the church, and visiting the home of Supreme Court justices that might soon sign on to this draft opinion of Justice Samuel Alito. Mobs and protests gathered outside the homes of Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Roberts this past weekend. Ugly displays outside St. Patrick's downtown Manhattan of women torturing dolls, showing, I guess, the importance of abortion. And it truly makes you wonder how it is you arrive at a moment where not only do you passionately believe in your position, but you so easily vilify your opponent. I want to take a moment here and really lean into intellectual honesty. I know that this charged issue has driven people to passion and to violence on both sides. I know that in the past there have been abortion clinics bombed and abortion doctors killed. I don't think it has been something that has happened often, but it has happened, and once is too many occurrences. But it is today that that same level of animosity and potential violence exists on the left. And it seems to exist in a way that nothing matters but the outcome. The left has fallen in love with its own outcome. It probably has already always been in love with its own outcome, but along the way, it has used the Trojan horse of process to play the shell game with us on achieving their outcome. Here's what I mean. The left talks about embracing democracy. Democracy, we have to protect our democracy. It's almost a Tourette syndrome tick on left-wing media channels like CNN. We must protect our democracy. Here we have potentially a Supreme Court opinion that would return the question of abortion to the people, to democracy, to a vote. And of course, that is seen as a massive step back in progress. It wasn't democracy that the left was seeking to protect, but their outcome they were seeking to achieve. Protests are always endorsed, even if they end up not peaceful. The BLM protest was embraced even in the midst of a pandemic, as public health experts said this is more important than COVID. You remember that from the spring of 2020. And then we saw buildings burning, and we know about the property damage and loss of life, and we were told they were mostly peaceful protest. But that's okay if it's in service of achieving the outcome. They talk so much about the radicalization and extremism of the right, but they're perfectly willing to burn down, both metaphorically and even some. There are Supreme Court reporters on social media talking about burn down one of the pillars of our republic, because we're not a democracy, we are a republic, in the Supreme Court if it doesn't effectuate your outcome. And even the process of due process, which we just got done talking about, when the public and when the left leaps to a conclusion that an officer is guilty of racism and that killing of an unarmed black man is almost certainly, not almost, but certainly due to racism, and that's the only way you get an A on your advanced placement quiz and proceed to America's halls of Ivy League colleges. If you have to violate due process in order to achieve that conclusion, to achieve that outcome, then so be it. You can burn down every process, due process, the Constitution, the Supreme Court of the United States, even your professed love for democracy, if it is about achieving your outcome. How can that be? How can you stand for nothing but, well, for what you stand? And for what you stand changes, as is the nature of progressivism, these days, on a week-to-week basis. I mean, the progressive of today would have burned down the process and the halls of governance in the name of righteousness when Barack Obama was president and believed that marriage should remain between a man and a woman. A decade ago, the acceptable opinion on the left would be opinion today worthy of violence. Here's what I think happens. This is what happens when you elevate your opinion to religiosity. And I think that much of the left has done just that. They have elevated their vote to that of an act of faith, that of an act of virtue. They've elevated politics to the place where many Americans hold at center stage their faith, their family, and their community. They have elevated their vote to the place where many Americans hold close their charity, their deeds, and their acts. your vote, and by extension, your opinion, has become the central tenet of your faith. And that faith evolves again on a week-to-week basis, as illustrated by who is most faithful to the current thing. What is the current thing? A trans flag in your bio, a Ukrainian flag on your social media feed. It is fascinating, by the way, that there are almost no companies outside of how we opened this podcast today, the Writers Guild of America, who've weighed in on the potential repeal of Roe v. Wade. Nothing from Disney. A public relations firm that represents Starbucks and Coca-Cola sent out a leaked memo that people have seen suggesting there's no upside for corporate America to weigh in. I would suggest to you this is a direct extension of Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida imposing a cost on politics for corporations. If you want to be a woke corporation who weighs in on the current thing, don't expect special privileges in politics. So corporations are largely sitting out. And it may be also that they know that the opinions being parroted, the opinions being held in this religious fervor by much of the left, are not the opinions of most Americans. Oh, I know, you're going to see a poll, you're going to see many polls about the percentage of Americans, be it 60% or whatever, that support keeping in place Roe v. Wade. And here's my interpretation of that. And I don't say this coming from a place of ego. I don't think most Americans know exactly what was said, what was argued, or what was held by Roe v. Wade. I don't think most Americans know that Roe v. Wade doesn't even serve as the law of the land. Roe v. Wade was replaced by Casey versus Planned Parenthood as a measure of analyzing when and when not an abortion should be legal. I think Americans want to stay away from this conversation. I think it's uncomfortable for the vast majority of us. I think it also feels never-ending. It feels like two rams butting heads on the side of a mountain. Big, large collision and big, large sound, but not much accomplishment. And so most Americans just opt for the status quo when confronted by a pollster. But I don't believe most Americans are ready to embrace the opinions that Democrats are ready to put forward. Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats look ready to put forth a federal bill, legislation, that would codify Roe v. Wade. And that is in the spirit of democracy. Go for it. You want to pass a law? Let's see if you have the votes. But that law would be radical. It would be more radical than Roe v. Wade. Early suggestions and rumors are about what they would embrace. And you would know this as you see Senate candidate Tim Ryan in Ohio, who's going up against J.D. Vance, was asked by Brett Baer on Fox News, when would you put the line? And he kept saying it's a woman's choice. See, that's the current thing. And it's unthinking the current thing. It's simply repeat. Ukrainian flag, trans flag, it's a woman's choice. Don't think beyond that. And so Tim Ryan kept repeating that to Brett Baer. And Brett Baer pushed him. What about 9 months? What about partial birth? It's a woman's choice. Do you know how radical that is? Look, the vast majority of countries on this planet do not embrace something like that. There's this perception the United States of America is somehow radically conservative on abortion. We're not. We're actually radically liberal on abortion. France, more restrictive than the United States of America, and way more restrictive than the position that those people on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral want. Or those protesters outside Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh's homes want, or those Senate Democrats are ready to put forward. No, the American people will not embrace that radical position. And a latest poll by CNN shows that, yes, this may have improved Democratic enthusiasm for turnout in the midterms by 7 points, but it's increased Republican turnout by 9 points. It's not the winner that Democrats believe, especially when you're forced to say what you believe, to lay out your position, to show exactly how far you'd go, how extreme. 7 months? 8 months? 9 months? Partial birth? Post-birth? 6 months old? You can't just keep saying it's a woman's choice. You can't call it a clump of cells. Where's your line? Science isn't working with you. Science is working the other way. A two-year-old is as dependent upon his mother as a five-week-old in utero, a five-week-old fetus. Are they both not alive? Have that opinion. Have that discussion. Have your position laid out. I don't think you'll reap the rewards, but I do know you hold it as a place of religiosity, and that's what allows you to elevate your position to one of faith and your opponent reduced to evil. Your vote is not who you are. Your skin color is not who you are. Your opinions are only part of who you are. We are so much more. We are faith. We are acts. We are family. We are friends. We are sports lovers. We are charitable. We are so much more complex than what we do or say or believe in a ballot box. And if we remember that, then we will elevate the right things and the right people to a position of religiosity.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Story number three. Sports media has now become the voice of the elite. Sports media is the voice of the athlete. You know, there was a fascinating moment this past week on First Take on ESPN. I'm always reluctant to talk about things I've been a part of. It's a shame because it's one of the juiciest things you can do is to dish on places you used to work or talk about people you still know. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. Now, I've told you before, it's not to pat myself on my own back. It's because I don't consider it manly. I don't think talking behind people's back is manly. So I'm not interested in hallway gossip of the places I used to work, but I can comment on things I see in the current news cycle from shows that I hold dear. I saw on First Take last week where Mad Dog Russo, Chris Russo, who's an famous legend in New York radio, who now makes weekly appearances on First Take, went in on Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors. Draymond had comments after a Golden State Warriors game. He was fined $25,000, and he was pretty arrogant, and as Draymond is, brash in his opinion. It's who Draymond is, and for me, it's fine. But for Mad Dog, he said America does not want to hear that, and that Draymond should just shut up and play. Now, Mad Dog is giving an opinion that is not held by himself and is not an opinion that comes from a place of negativity or malevolence. There's a lot of people out there that think athletes shouldn't be so angry, shouldn't be so confrontational. There's a lot of people out there that believe politicians shouldn't be so angry and confrontational. There's a lot of people out there that believe human beings shouldn't act that way, especially when privileged to play a sport. It's a widely held opinion, and whether or not you agree or disagree, you can't really say whether or not you are wrong or you are right. But J.J. Redick, a former NBA player, checked all collegiality aside, mustered up the minimal amount of charm he could discover, and went in on Mad Dog Russo saying stuff like there were undertones to what he had to say, implication being those undertones were racist in nature. J.J. Redick backed off that and said, I wasn't talking about race, but it was enough that his supporters and his detractors seemed to understand that is what he was suggesting with undertones. Stephen A. Smith immediately after that took up for Mad Dog and said, I know Mad Dog, and that's not coming from a place of race. He even called into Mad Dog's radio show and reiterated the same thing. But J.J. Redick said it reminded him of Shut Up and Dribble, something many commentators said, and he pinned on Fox News. He said that comment from Mad Dog sounded like something you would hear on Fox News. It was also dripping in anger and condescension. And since then, it's only gotten uglier. I could see it because I'm still roped into First Take viral moments. I could see it happening on social media that day. I could see the swarm around Mad Dog. I feel for him because I've felt that numerous times. And I don't think that's what Mad Dog was going for. I was never afraid of it, and I knew what world I was walking into when I had an opinion that I knew would be unpopular. But I don't think Mad Dog was going for anything. I don't even know that I know what he believes, except he's older And he shares an opinion that a lot of people do, especially older sports fans. But it's gotten uglier beyond the social media viral moment. Draymond then had to weigh in. And this is where it gets the ugliest. It's like Draymond is trying to get Mad Dog canceled. He pointed to a tweet from years ago by Grant Napier, who was a play-by-play guy from the Sacramento Kings. Now, you could remember Grant Napier because he was fired as play-by-play man of the Sacramento Kings in 2020 because he said he believes all lives matter. That is what cost Napier his job. Napier told a story on social media at some point where he said Mad Dog came over to his house and he was 9 years old at the time. And Mad Dog, this must have been, I don't know what years this would have been because I don't know exactly how old Mad Dog is. I'm going to say the 1960s, maybe. Mad Dog used the N-word. And Napier was talking about the background he comes from and his father. He might have been attempting to give some context to who he is and how race isn't what's driving his opinion when he says all lives matter. And he said his dad took Mad Dog and gave him a talking to at the age of 9. And Mad Dog never since that moment has ever used the N-word again. Napier shared this story. I don't know whether or not that's his story to share. Again, I think that's kind of back to where I started. That's why you don't talk about people's business behind people's back, because it's coming back. A Mad Dog. And Draymond is using it to say, see, look who you've hired. First take. Someone who at 9 years old said an ugly word and was corrected and changed his life. If you ask me, the ugly part of this equation is Draymond looking to get a 9-year-old canceled for a mistake that he made and has corrected. Here's what's happened, and I think this is fascinating. Yes, of course, race is so intricately baked in every sports conversation. But there's something more. And I found this fascinating when I was more directly involved in sports, and I still am, and I will be more as we move forward. But it's like the cool way to do sports commentary became to hate the fan and ride for the athlete. It was always to defend the athlete. It's that the athlete is the victim, and he's a victim at the hands of the unbecoming fan. I think sports itself, on top of sports media, has forgotten who pays the bills. It's the fan that matters. I never forgot that, by the way. As we did the Will Cain Show, we always did it with the fan in mind. That doesn't mean pander. That doesn't mean be a fake populist. That means understand who's in the conversation and center to the conversation is the fan. It's the oddest thing now to suck up to the millionaire, to paint the millionaire as the victim, because that's the ultimate currency in society, to suck up to the elite. Every commentator, every host on ESPN, it's like we're trying to get inside the velvet rope, because inside the velvet rope, that's where the cool kids are, the kids we could never be a part of, because we weren't the star high school athlete, the college athlete. Well, some of us were bench riding scrubs on D1 water polo teams, but not all of us had that special experience. You know, it's like we're trying to get behind that velvet rope to be in the in crowd. In order to do so, we got to separate ourselves from the common man, the sullied, the dirty fan, and laud the fashionable athlete. Look, I didn't do it either way. What I did is character. Either way, celebrate character in the individual. Who's right, who's wrong, who's the human being who's acting and exhibiting merit in a way that is something to celebrate. But the way sports media has evolved, I don't know, it's indicative of larger society. How many of us have to suck up to the elite because we want to be part of the elite? I had a law professor one time that said that the ultimate separator in society is that middle-class people want to be away from poor people and rich people want to be away from middle-class people, always trying to separate ourselves to distinguish how we are better. It's gross. One thing I like that has happened, at least inside of conservative thought over the last 5 years, is a re-embrace in the nobility of the common man. And I believe that. The nobility of the fan. Not every fan. There are rude fans. There are racist fans. But the nobility of the fan and the common man. And let me tell you something. Sports media has lost its way. First Take saw the viral media moment last week. I know they did, and they're going to get the wrong message from it. That is the wrong way to go. J.J. Redick is the wrong way to go. Not as an individual, but in that moment. Whatever he decided to say, whatever he decided, what lane he decided to go down, as though it's not the most crowded lane in sports media and at ESPN. Oh, look, here's a moment. Virtue signal down the woke highway. Yeah. All right, man. You're the 24th car down that highway. How brave. And it will be rewarded, I'm sure, but that's the point. It's so out of touch. It'll lose in the ratings. You want to go that way? Talk about your first-class plane tickets. Talk about your $5,000 suits. You want to go that way? That's fine. You'll be the media version of, what was it? The Players Club, the Players Tribune. The Players Tribune. For athletes, by athletes. All the articles written by athletes. Pfft, nobody reads it. You can play in your elite circles. They are small. But you'll burn up the dollar of the man who writes the check. The common man. The fan. All right, that's going to do it for you today here on the Will Cain Podcast. We've got a big week coming up. Some fascinating interviews. I've told you, share this podcast with your friends. We're sort of doing really well on YouTube. You can watch the Will Cain Podcast. We've had several go into the millions, into the half a millions. You can always watch these conversations and share it with your friends. I'll see you again next time on the Will Cain Podcast.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.